Hi everyone, and welcome back to Aha with Alistair. Today we're exploring music of our fifth and final Jack M. Champagne Masterworks concert of the season. We're calling this concert Dvorak's New World. Not only does our program include Dvorak's beloved Ninth Symphony, it includes music by three American composers who were inspired by Dvorak's legacy: George Gershwin, Gerard Tate, and Florence Price. Now, speaking of inspired, my inspiration for this program came from Dr. Marvin Curtis, who just happens to be joining me now in the studio. Welcome, Marvin.
Thank you, sir. Good to see you.
It's great to see you, too. You know, I imagine everyone in South Bend knows who you are. But for those listening from further afield, you are currently the board chair of the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. You're the retired dean of Indiana University South Bend, the chair of our orchestra's Equality, Diversity, and Inclusion Committee. You're also a composer, an organist, a conductor. Did I miss anything?
My current job.
What's your current job?
My current job is I'm the coordinator of arts equity and public art for the city of South Bend.
You know, I knew that. My apologies, sir. In short, you are an invaluable member of South Bend's art scene and our community.
Thank you.
So 2 years ago, you started a book club with the South Bend Symphony. And one of the books you chose was called Dvorak's Prophecy by Joseph Horowitz. Mm-hmm. And it had a foreword by our friend George Shirley. And this book deals in detail with how Dvorak inspired generations of composers. And it got me thinking, could we craft a concert program around this concept? Long story short, we did, and we are here right now to talk about it. So, Marvin, my first question to you, what is Dvorak's legacy to you?
Dvorak's legacy was the fact that he was the first composer and musician in this country, in America, to talk about using the lyrics, but the music of the Negro spiritual and the Native American Indian as a basis for establishing a musical field here in America. When he came to America to start the American Conservatory mm-hmm. of Music, I think 1891, mm-hmm. He encountered a man named Harry T. Burley. Mm-hmm. And Harry T. Burley, who was an African-American, was in New York and became his librarian for his orchestra. Hmm. Harry T. Burley was also a great singer. And he and Dvorak were very close because as the librarian, like you are with the librarian of the symphony, that role. But also Dvorak came in touch with other African-American students, which was very interesting in the 1890s because segregation kept us away from.
Wow.
So the National Conservatory had, of the 600 students, there was about 150 of them were African-American.
Wow.
Very unusual in that
wow.
time period. So he got a dose. The other thing I've discovered is that Burley's grandmother was a Native American. So Dvorak
wow.
heard not only the spirituals that he heard from his grandfather, who had been enslaved, but he also heard those melodies from that part of his background. So Dvorak's legacy was that American composers should use, as he did in Czechoslovakia, where he came from,
mm-hmm.
their native music,
right,
which of course caused a firestorm in America and got him almost kicked out of the country.
Dvorak did practice what he preached.
Yes, he did.
In his music, not mm-hmm. just his string quartet, the American quartet, and his cello concerto, which he composed here in America, but especially the fantastic example of the Symphony No. 9, which mm-hmm. is known as From the New World, the New World being America. We're going to be playing the entire symphony in the second half, so perhaps we should start by talking about it. So, Marvin, what's the significance to you about Dvorak's Ninth Symphony?
He created this melody, which we now know is Going Home,
yeah.
which is not a spiritual.
No.
And it is not part of the African-American tradition that we would have sung. But it was something that he created, I think, out of what he heard. And a lot of times, even as a composer, I will make up or I will compose a piece of music. And I will recall my upbringing in the black church
mm-hmm.
and create melodies or use texts that I'm familiar with, which I did that with City on the Hill for the President when I wrote for Clinton.
Wow.
I was asked to write a piece with African-American themes. And I was like, okay, what is that?
Uh-huh.
And Stephen Hayes, who was the conductor of the choir at Philando Smith College in Little Rock, did not want a gospel piece. And I don't write gospel music.
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted an anthem with African-American themes. So for me, it was finding the text that were familiar to African-Americans. And so in the piece, I use familiar text from the African-American church as part of the text. But I used the European style of music in the composition. So that was the weaving of the two. And the interesting part was when we got to D.C. for the inauguration, they kept asking for, well, where's the music? Where's the music? Because they expected something that was what I didn't write.
Oh, gosh.
And Colonel Bushwell, who was conductor of the U.S. Marine Band, finally said, this is the music. There's no tambourines. There's no hand clapping. It's a straight anthem.
Wow.
But the text was.
Yeah.
So for Dvorak, he created the song that we know is Going Home, but it was not a spiritual, but it was in the style of. And so
it sure was.
Yeah,
it was. It's so famous now. It's played by an English horn in context. But I don't think he supplied the words for it. It was one of his students, William Arms Fisher, in 1922.
Mm-hmm.
And let's hear the great American singer Paul Robeson sing "Going Home."
Just going home, quiet like some still day. I'm just going home. It's not far, just close by, through an open door. Work all done, care laid by, going to feel no more. Mother's there expecting me, father's waiting too. Lots of folks gathered there, all the friends I.
That gives Dvorak's second movement just a whole other meaning, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I've often wondered if there were words to that when I first heard it. Growing up in England, that was the music used for a bread advertisement, you know, the homeliness of the smell of the bread and two people walking up a hill, and then we were all encouraged to go out and buy Hovis bread. So that was my first connection with that. I didn't know it was Dvorak.
Mm.
But I always wondered when I heard that if it had lyrics, and I love that William Arms Fisher put lyrics to it.
Let me say this too also. If you look at pictures or video of Franklin Roosevelt's funeral after he died, you'll see black people sort of singing that piece.
Oh, gosh.
You know,
that's wonderful.
And there's a very famous picture of a black man crying, and I think he was playing an accordion. I can't remember what he was playing, but anyway, that's how I first connected to the piece. I remember watching newsreels and hearing that, but it wasn't something that we sang regularly because it was not from the spiritual tradition. But we've adopted it as because with the words, it was very meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
But Dvorak took that, and of course, it's now a very famous melody.
It's stunning. I can't believe it's original. It sounds like something that's been around for centuries.
Yeah.
But going back to what you were saying about how you composed the anthem for Clinton's inauguration, you are the embodiment of Dvorak's legacy. Mm-hmm. You went within the country. You used melodies and inspiration from your heritage, and you composed. I mean, do you do that in all your music?
Sometimes.
Okay, sometimes. Most of it.
Most of it, I do. I have another piece I've written called This Day, and it has a drum pattern in it, a dotted quarter, quarter note, which is a basic African.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gone to Africa 1993 to study in Ghana for several weeks and read about that. I think it's called the Toname. Da, 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 da. And mm-hmm. in this piece, I use that a lot. Mm-hmm. And I used it quite a bit because it was that basic, which is the basic beat that you build all the rhythms on top mm-hmm. of. So, and so I've a lot of the music I've composed, of course, are arrangements of spirituals mm-hmm. Or pieces in the style of a spiritual, because that's my heritage, my background.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure Dvořák would be very proud.
He'd be very proud.
Let's go back to his Ninth Symphony. Marvin, to me, the third movement of Dvořák's Ninth Symphony reminds me a little of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, but we know that Dvořák's image for this movement was the Native American dance scene in Longfellow's The Song of Hiawatha, so an inspiration of Native American music.
Brody's grandmother mm-hmm. was Native American, mm-hmm. and I think, again, when you live in another country, you begin to, and as he did, he studied this music, mm-hmm. yeah. and with having Burley around him, you know, they met twice a week. He played in the symphony at the American Conservatory. He was a student. He was one of the copyists. He did all this stuff with Burley. With Dvořák, which introduced him to, and so I give an example. When I went to the Soviet Union the Soviet Union back in the 90s, we heard a lot of their folk music. Mm-hmm. That sort of, it becomes part of your life for a while. I was mm-hmm. there for 3 weeks, so you know, I got immersed in it. When I was in Africa in Ghana, I heard a lot of drumming. Mm-hmm. And I also met J.W. Nketiah, who was the father of Ghanaian music. Fabulous man. And we talked about music and about not only music, but words, lyrics, pronunciations, mm-hmm. vowel sounds. I learned a great deal from him about. And all that becomes part of you as a composer. So I'm sure for Dvořák, being around all this is new. Plus, Dvořák used his Native American, his Native music from Czechoslovakia,
right,
but Bohemia, whatever you want to call it, then, as the basis for, as many composers did. Mm-hmm. You know, Brahms used, you know, the Liebeslieder waltzes of Brahms are German poetry. You know?
Right.
So American music had not been established as American music yet,
and thanks to
it was still out of the European tradition.
Right.
Although we did have the beginning of the American musical, but it was theater. But mm-hmm. for the concert hall, it was the European tradition. And so thanks to Dvořák, who said, use this. But the reaction was not a good reaction towards him.
Which I find astonishing, because surely it's safe to say that since 1892 and 1893, every American composer has had to choose whether to follow Dvořák's mm-hmm. advice or not. Is that fair to say?
Yes, but not acknowledge it.
But not acknowledge it. I mean, some composers have clearly done so. Right. I mean, you look at Copland, who, you know, Appalachian Spring, Billy the Kid, mm-hmm. Rodeo, John Henry. I mean, so many inspirations and influences from American music. Oh, he created American music.
Right.
But where are the spirituals?
Well,
where's the native music?
And that is that's the rub in all of this. Mm. In the book, mm-hmm. Copland was one of the three composers or three musicians that poo-pooed African-American music.
Mm.
which was a surprise to me.
Yep.
But he was one of the three, and did not want to acknowledge it. He had a very poor vision of jazz at first, and did not particularly like George Gershwin stuff.
Mm.
So you got this European tradition that everybody thinks is the best, and in Copland, you know, he took Appalachian Spring. He took Simple Gifts,
mm-hmm.
a Shaker melody. Which we all sing,
right?
You know,
which is American, for sure.
Rodeo, you know, he's out west.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these different things, but you don't acknowledge or appreciate because African Americans at that time period weren't appreciated.
Yeah,
you know, this conservatory was one of the first schools where Black folks were really allowed to go to school
mm-hmm.
to learn. But what did they learn? They learned the European tradition.
Yeah. So Copland really didn't go far enough, you'd say, in your opinion.
Uh-huh. No, I mean, now he did the old American songs,
yep.
which I'm sure you're familiar
yep.
with.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a minstrel stuff in there,
mm.
which is not the best use of our image.
Right.
Because minstrel show songs were about degrading Black folks.
Right. So we're going to do the Dvorak Symphony in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Our concert will begin with remarks from our friend George Shirley, who wrote the foreword to Horowitz's mm-hmm. book.
Yes.
And this will lead to music by the first of the three composers who followed, perhaps a bit more clearly than Copland, Dvorak's advice. And the music that we're going to hear first is, to me, probably the clearest example of a white American composer looking within African-American traditions for inspiration. And this is music from George Gershwin's Porgy and Bess.